For a business to be around for more than 50 years, you know they must be doing something right. At D&H Drugstores, something right has always been service, convenience, trust, qualities that build lasting relationships. D&H has been a part of this community for so long because D&H cares about so much more than just filling prescriptions. It's about our family taking care of your family since 1956. D&H Drugstore, your family drugstore, on Broadway at West Boulevard and on Paris Road in the Haithman Village Shopping Center, Columbia.
Good morning and welcome to Radio Friends. This is Monday. It's August the 6th and we have Joan Stack with us. Very nice lady, very intelligent lady from the State Historical Society. Welcome back to Radio Friends, Joan. Looks like you got some old money with you here.
Well, yes, I am going to be talking today about a mini exhibit that we are having in the Bingham Room of our gallery. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, perhaps since the Civil War, we are going to have on display the Journal of the Rebel Legislature that seceded from the state of Missouri in 1861.
That's a pretty big deal, isn't it?
Yes, and it's a...
This has never been on display?
As far as we know, certainly not in the historical time that I've been here or anybody can remember.
So how did you get your hands on this?
Well, this came into the society many, many years ago, and it is a document that has recently garnered a fair amount of attention because people are very interested in the 150th anniversary. And what's especially interesting about Missouri is we had a rebel governor and a governor that supported the Union. Mm-hmm. And the rebel governor was the elected governor, but there were some questions of his loyalty, and he ended up being expelled from Jefferson City by the Union Army.
And so we had two governors at the same time.
That's right.
And the Union expelled the rebel. Well, where was the rebel governor living?
Well, he was in Jefferson City. His name was Claiborne Fox Jackson, and he had been elected governor, but the people of Missouri weren't that eager to secede, and he was pushing us towards that. Some people liked the idea, but many others did not. So various things happened, and he ended up having to run away from Jefferson City. And you may have heard of the Battle of Boonville. Mm-hmm. He was running away at that very point. He ends up in southern Missouri in Neosho in October of 1861 and calls together all the legislators who agree with him, all the rebel legislators. We still don't know if he had a quorum or not. They conveniently did not take a roll of the rebel legislature. So we don't know exactly who was there.
He wasn't quite doing things on the up and up, was he?
Well, there are people that have varying opinions about Mr. Jackson.
But can you imagine back in those days, there was no instant communication.
No.
There was no email, no telephone. There was no internet and the 24-hour news cycle letting us know what's happening. How long it took to move information from one part of the state to the other or from one group to another?
Yeah, well, it would take at least several days, the mm-hmm. length of time it would take for somebody to ride up and provide news. And you wouldn't know how accurate the news was until you got several different reports.
It kind of like it came over the back fence from several different people.
And there were people in Columbia that supported this rebel legislature, but there were many who did not. And the federal government never recognized that Missouri seceded from the Union because there was a Unionist legislature as well and a Unionist government. I say there was a Unionist legislature. Actually, many of the people who were involved in the government were appointed. So saying there's a Unionist legislature at the same time is perhaps not accurate. Later on, there was a Unionist legislature.
Now, the rebel government, they printed their own money.
That's
they
right.
They issued their own money. Did this money have any value at all except to them?
Well, they hoped it would, and that's what I have here a reproduction of a $3 bill.
That will be
on display. It has a portrait of the rebel governor, Claiborne Fox Jackson.
Now, is this the actual size of that $3 bill?
No, it's smaller than that. I reproduced it a little bit larger so that you could get a better look at it. It's kind of interesting. You can see some Confederate flags surrounding the governor. I think it's particularly interesting that there's a little mountain man over here, a figure who clearly associates Missouri with the West.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, Missouri was considered the far West, really.
Yeah. Well, if you want to see what we're talking about, go to KBIA.org, click on Talk Shows, and then Radio Friend, and watch this segment, and you can see the money that we're talking about. This is a $3 bill.
That's right. And people can go and see this displayed.
You've got the actual $3 bill.
Yes. And it's signed by Claiborne Fox Jackson. It will be on display with the handwritten journal.
Did he sign each one of the bills?
That's right. He did.
He hand-signed each piece of money that was issued?
That's right, and that gave it its authority. And so you asked, was it worth anything? Well, they were hoping the Confederacy would prevail. So had the Confederacy prevailed, I suppose it might have been honored. And it was used to pay the rebel state guard, the army, for the state guard of Missouri that supported Governor Jackson. But in the end, it was rather worthless.
Fell apart.
Yeah.
What kind of backing did they have for the paper money? Did they have gold or silver to back it up?
Not really. Now, they had there were a number of bankers who placed their bets with
the rebels,
and they gave them money to support raising an army, but they ended up losing money. The financial story is rather important. When you follow the money, you see how important money was.
And you have a handwritten documentation.
Yes, of the journal. And so you can see what happened. We will have online the actual text so you can read a typeset version of it.
But the journal is there. Can people see and feel it?
They can't touch it, but it will be in a case, and we will have a portrait, a rare crayon portrait of Claiborne Fox Jackson up above it. It'll be in the room with General Order No. 11 and all those famous pictures by George Caleb Bingham. And, of course, George Caleb Bingham knew Claiborne Fox Jackson. He didn't care for him much. They were both from the town of Arrow Rock, and so they had been associates. They had been
weren't bosom buddies.
No. Bingham was a unionist, and in fact he wrote about Claiborne Fox Jackson. Poor Claibe, his career began in honor and ends in infamy. So he was not pleased with what Claiborne Fox Jackson
did. All right, so give us it's a mini exhibit.
Mini exhibit.
When?
It will be on through August. We will have it. We haven't really set an ending date for this, but through the next few months.
Okay, at the State Historical Society.
Yeah, that's right.
And your hours of operation are?
Well, to get into the gallery, you have to come Tuesday through Saturday. The gallery opens at 9, and on weekdays, it closes at 4:30.
Okay.
And on Saturday at 3:45.
All right, Joan Stack, thank you so much
Thanks.
For coming by. Always a pleasure to have you here. Will you come back again?
Yes.
All right. Tomorrow, Adult Daycare Connection and Talking Horse Productions, our program directed by Travis McMillan. Reynolds Journalism Institute, Audio Pat Acres, KBIA, our floor director, Danny Madison, and our assistant producer and guest coordinator, Uncle James Mauser. And if there's something you would like to hear or see on our program, drop me an email, pepperp@missouri.edu. Bye-bye.